Listening to the Hour of the Time, I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pooh.
You're welcome.
Good night, honey.
Good night.
Well, folks, let's go right straight down to Phoenix and get the medal report with Frank Marzullo. Good evening, Frank.
Good evening.
What's going on?
What's going on is we've seen the Dow break finally after 4 weeks or so of languishing and up and down, and not a lot of volatility, but it's been there. We've seen it break new highs. But again, if we look at the advanced decline ratio for every stock that has gone up, more have gone down or remained static. So when we look at the numbers are telling us, again, flight to quality. It's fairly obvious the words are everywhere, headlines everywhere about inflation, even millionaires sweat retirement because of inflation. Remember, inflation, even at 3% a year, it spells trouble for long-term investors. The signs are there. Mainstream has been picking up and just saying this. Glamour magazine is a fairly well-to-do and well-respected woman's magazine, even just saying in the last issue, to get the financial advice, don't get in the stock market now. It's not a good time. We've talked in the past about FundMinder and their mutual fund updates and preserving asset values in volatile markets. They're saying the market's overdue for a correction. They expect a 35% at least correction. Everything's there. And what's disappointing is it's come to my attention that a lot of people are waiting till after the elections. Bad move. Bad move. What's going to change? Clinton gets in, it's going to be worse. Sol gets in, it's going to be worse. I mean, how many times have you gone over this, the truth about the nature of what's going on? I don't understand people. I talked to a real good friend of mine today who's followed financial markets and is very knowledgeable about a lot of these things. And his point, and it's very valid, you only make money by bucking trends, okay? And right now, people need to be bucking the trend, and that's getting out of the market. Even though the market, for all intents and purposes, has been flattening out, the writing's been on the wall, there's still people that greed impulse. Oh, it might go a little bit higher, it might go a little bit higher. But bottom line is you're not going to be able to get out when it starts turning. It's been proven time and time again that is the case. Another thing that's also come to my attention, people are shunning the new $100 bills, new notes. We've talked about it. It's the new contract. When the time comes, it's the old contract that will become worthless. So, God, I just can't believe how ignorant people can be when it comes to change. Even when, you go through and explain, I can see why you get frustrated. Because you tell these people over and over and over again, and they still do the wrong thing. Have the new notes. Get out of stocks. Get yourself hedged into positions of safety because the writing is on the wall and has been. The big boys, like we talked about, big boys are doing it. Martin Biggs of Morgan Stanley, $1 billion into the gold market. And there was another article recently about them calling for some serious inflationary problems. Hey, where'd you hear it first? Right here on the Hour of the Time. Now mainstream's following up with it. Take our advice. Do what you got to do. Get yourself liquid, get yourself into gold, which, by the way, has been hovering in a very narrow range between 390 and 391. And we know the central banks want to keep it down. Take advantage of that. Get it while you can, while it's cheap.
Well, thank you, Frank. Do you have your Alan Greenspan quote?
I mailed that up to you. Didn't you get it yet?
I've got it in my hand.
Okay.
Just wondered if you want to read it or if you want me to read
it. Go ahead and read it.
This is a quote from Alan Greenspan. He said this in Gold and Economic Freedom, in Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal, in 1967 on page 101. And I quote, ladies and gentlemen, listen very carefully. This is the man who's running the Federal Reserve System now. In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. End quote. Got a parting shot for us, Frank?
Well, yeah. Rucksack, real nice thing. Use the Ziploc bag, the large Ziploc bag to store clothes and stuff in. What it does, it makes it easier to pack your bag. It makes it easier if you got to get something out, you can see what you have, and also helps keep it dry.
Great. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Folks, call Frank at 1-800-289-2646, and do it now. He's the one who spends time with us. You ought to spend a little time with him. And remember, you're dealing with Swiss America Trading. You can't go wrong. 1-800-289-2646 is the number. Well, we're going to have a special guest tonight. As soon as I can get that guest on the line, I think that's it right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. You're not going to want to miss one single moment of tonight's broadcast. That's who's on the other end of the line. Is that you, Michelle?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thank you.
Folks, we're going to be talking tonight about Michelle's book, and we just decided on a title today. Would you like to tell our listening audience the title of the book, Michelle?
The title of the first volume of the book is called Oklahoma City, Day One.
And there's a reason for that. Would you like to explain the reason for the name of the title?
Yes, the first volume of the book deals only with April the 19th, 1995, and related issues that came up that day. Now, of course, it does go into the future on some of those events because we have to talk about them, but all of the seeds of everything that's discussed in this first book were manifested on that first day.
And how many pages are we talking about?
Okay, well, I'm talking 8.5 by 11 typewritten sheets, and of course the book will be 6 by 9, so the page numbers are going to change.
And how many total pages?
605.
That's 605, and is that counting the photographs and, pardon?
No, it's not.
Can you give us an estimate with all of that extraneous?
Well, with all of the photographs and maps and things like that, there will be in the neighborhood of 640 pages.
Okay. And translating that into a smaller size than, well, actually into a 6x9 book, we're talking, folks, probably right around 700 pages for this first volume. We thought we would have to split it in two. We're lucky. We don't. We found a printer that can print and bind 700 pages, and it could even be more, but that's how much information has actually come out of only the first day, April the 19th, of the bombing of the Mira Federal Building in Oklahoma City. It's an extraordinary amount of work. It was an extraordinary investigation. All of our people who took part in it, and of course Michelle was supervising the investigation and collecting and forwarding information and evidence to us for analysis. And then keeping a timeline and a written account and making reports. I think, in fact, I believe that, when did we have our conference?
Last May the 29th through June the 2nd.
May the 29th through June the 2nd. So before May the 29th, we had already received, as a result of our investigation, probably 2,000 or more pieces of paper as reports, as faxes, as mail, plus I don't know how many hundreds of newspaper articles. There must have been, I would estimate, at least, oh, probably 100 hours of videotape. I can't even estimate how many minutes or hours of audio tape. But that was all before May the 29th. What do you think that we have all together by now, by this time?
I know that before May the 29th, in just publications and newspaper clippings, I shipped you approximately 150 pounds of materials by UPS. And at that time, there were about 100 hours of videotape. There's now about 300 hours of videotape. And in thinking about this book, I thought the listeners might be interested in knowing some of the things that are in it and why I think this book is different from the other books that are out on the bombing. There are probably right now a dozen books on the market about the Oklahoma City bombing. I've seen most of them. Some of them are very good. They all treat the event from different perspectives. Some of them were obviously very rushed and opportunistic. It's like, hey, we have a big event. Let's get something published quick and we'll make some money. And they're already laughably out of date and incorrect and, you know, wasn't worth the $5 I spent for the paperback.
Yeah.
But I think what is different about this particular book and the books that will follow on the subject is they really are definitive reference works on the subject. And in looking into the future, when other people want to write about this event or want to research the event, this will be the work that they will go to as a reference work because it really is definitive. It's encyclopedic. And there are so many tools to research in it as well. This particular volume one only deals with five of a bazillion videotapes. And the videotapes are completely indexed. So for someone who is doing a serious research project, they could make an appointment to visit the library and to go immediately to what they needed to see on the videotape. The bibliography, interviews, and references at the end are unbelievably comprehensive. Anything anybody needs to know about the issues that were involved on the first day, there's a source for it in this book. And if we couldn't document it, it's not there. And we handled the rumors and disproved the rumors. We handled the disinformation and disproved that. And this book takes on all comers. We've taken on Bob Ricks, Frank Keating, John Cash, the BATF, the FBI, the U.S. Marshal Service, and pretty much convicted them with their own words. But they would make statements, and then we would just show the evidence. It's all documented. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And what you said is true. Anybody in the future who does any research on the Mira Federal Building bombing in Oklahoma City will go directly to this piece of work, this monumental piece of work, before they even attempt to go anywhere else. I share your feelings about the early books that came out. They were opportunistic. It was obvious that they were done just to make money. The books were written strictly from press reports and put together very quickly and probably sold an awful lot, but they were wrong, full of disinformation. They convicted people and organizations that had nothing to do with the bombing whatsoever, and they're going to be very embarrassed when your book hits the market.
Well, I can't help that.
By the way, folks, the book should be off the presses in 10 weeks or less. As soon as they're off the presses, we're going to start shipping. We're making the book available for purchase tonight. And if you get your payment in, as soon as the books come off the press, they'll be shipped directly to you. And the price of the book is $25 plus $5 shipping and handling for a total postpaid price of $30, unless you want an autographed copy. And if you want an autographed copy, it's $35 postpaid. It will be autographed both by Michelle and I will autograph the foreword of the book, which I'm writing. So you can begin sending in your orders right now. They will be cataloged. They will be all ready, and when they come off the press, your book will immediately go into a box that will already be labeled with your name on it and be out the door that same day.
Can't ask for better service than that.
Nope, sure can. Are you ready to autograph a lot of books, Michelle?
Oh, yeah. my pen ready.
Well, I got to tell you, I did that. I autographed 500 hardbound, first edition, numbered books of my book when it first came out, and autographing 500 books is a real big job, I got to tell you.
Well, I'll do what I have to do. Let me tell the listening audience a little bit about the appendices to this book.
Please do.
Because they're probably the most valuable part of it. There are 9 appendices in this book. The book itself is comprised of the foreword, which is written by Bill, an introduction by me, 15 chapters, and an epilogue. And then we begin the appendices. The first appendix deals with biographical material of most of the major players who were involved on that day, and there's a lot of information in there about Frank Keating and the Knights of Malta and that particular agenda. The second appendix deals with the seismic evidence, and we will put in the 5 different seismograms, which there were 2 from, let me just think how to explain this. From the 19th of April, there was the Geologic Survey and the Omniplex. on the implosion of the building, there was the geologic survey and the omniplex, and then there was the very interesting and rumor-causing seismogram drawing, which Dr. Raymond Brown came up with last November when he played dot to dot with the dots on the omniplex recording and tried to see what it might have shown had the needle not been forced off the drum by the vibrations of the explosions, and that started a whole big rumor that what he had drawn was the real thing and the FBI had erased the original. I mean, it was really funny. But that's discussed in great detail in the book, and so I felt like we should include that in the appendix.
Yeah, and it's totally false anyway, because
completely.
We actually obtained from the Omniplex a copy of the actual seismograph paper, the graph itself, before the FBI had any chance to do anything to anything.
Right. We got our copy before the FBI even knew it existed.
That's right.
And
in fact, we got both copies before anybody knew any of them existed.
True. And I put in the reports that we got from Dr. Luza and Dr. Mankin, and complete transcripts of our interviews with those men, and letters signed by these top geologists and giving their interpretations of the seismograms. Appendix number 3 is evidence of the internal explosions. That includes letters from explosives experts as to what they believe happened, a complete reprint of General Parton's report, and probably, in my mind, one of the most valuable pieces of evidence in that regard, a complete transcript of his comments at the press conference of June the 30th. That press conference lasted over 2 hours, and the news media, they gave it maybe 30 seconds. And his comments were stunning and right to the point of exactly what the agenda was in this whole thing. And it's excellent. And that entire transcript of that press conference, his part of it is included. And then Appendix 4 deals with prior knowledge on the part of federal agents. And we've got statements and press releases, articles, transcripts of press conferences, all which confirm prior knowledge on the part of the BATF, the FBI, the Justice Department, the U.S. Marshal Service, and the Oklahoma City Fire Department. And we have a copy of the letter of immunity, which was granted by the Denver office of the U.S. Marshal Service to the paid government informant. And then Appendix 5 deals with what happened with the anti-terrorism legislation. And we have a letter that was signed by 13 of the victims explaining, I mean, they were innocents in this. They didn't know they were being used and abused. They really didn't. But it explains their agenda, and the interesting part in the letter is where they talk about who is directing what they were doing. And they were led to do what they did in terms of lobbying for the passage of the anti-terrorism bill by the state attorney general's office working hand-in-hand with the federal prosecutors. And we also have a letter from Bud Welch, who was a victim, his daughter was killed, and I confirmed that was a genuine letter. And he found out that they were being used and went public about it and has paid a price for it ever since. And we'll be publishing that letter. Also publishing the digest of Senate Bill 735, which was signed into public law 104-132, and the complete text of the anti-terrorism law.
You know what? This is the first time it's ever happened. We've got a little problem. You're holding the mouthpiece a little too close and talking a little too loud.
Well, I'll back off.
Okay.
Appendix number 6 is militia information, and we will be reprinting an article which you and Betty Shire wrote called The Truth About the Militias. Appendix 7 is maps dealing with the downtown area, the restricted area around the Murrah Building, and the underground concourse, which is the tunnel system, which runs underneath Oklahoma City. I don't know, too many people out there know about the concourse, but it's beginning to play quite an interesting role in the investigation into the bombing.
I can assure you that most of the listeners have never even heard anything about it.
About the concourse?
Right.
It's an extensive series of underground tunnels. Early in the 1900s, for reasons unknown, there were just a whole bunch of tunnels built underneath Oklahoma City that connected different businesses, different homes, different facilities. And over the years, those fell into disrepair and became very unsafe. And the city council decided at some point that they thought it would be a great place for an underground shopping mall, you know, hair salons and little places to have lunch and things like that. And so they, working with a section that runs 7 blocks north to south and extends east to west 4 blocks, all of the tunnels underneath the downtown area there were refurbished and people began to put businesses in. And you can go down in the Marriott Convention Center and start walking at the south end and walk all the way north to the Murrah Building underground, and that is where the tunnel system stops at the north end, is the Murrah Building. And it connects to the federal courthouse and the post office and all these other places. But that will be mapped, and at the beginning of our information on the concourse and the role it played is also in the book. Then Appendix 8 is the videotape references, and Appendix 9 is the bibliography, interviews, and other references involved in the putting together of the book.
How many people have we interviewed so far?
I don't know.
Can you take a guess?
Let me think for a minute. I couldn't put a number on it, Bill. It's just a bunch.
A whole lot of people.
A whole lot of people. A whole lot.
In this first volume, Michelle, what do you think is the most revealing and most disturbing fact that people are going to discover and not be able to really deal with adequately based upon what they've been told previously by the officials?
That the officials definitely did know about it, planned it, and executed it.
And, of course, had been lying from day one all the way up to the present.
Yeah. The men accused are only remotely involved, and I don't believe Terry Nichols had anything to do with it at all.
Now, I think that literally the most devastating facts that come out in this piece of work, without any reservations whatsoever, folks, is the fact that, you know what? Maybe we'd better not dwell too much on those types of things. Let's let people discover those for themselves, because
if we tell them everything, they won't buy the book.
Well, that's not the reason for it. I don't want to tell them what kind of conclusions to draw from the evidence that's presented, because people have accused me of shaping people's conclusions beforehand in the past, and that's why there's no narration on the Zapruder film now.
And in this book, too, there aren't that many conclusions that I draw. We just lay it all out and say, well, this is how it connects, and this is the proof for how it connects, and now you decide what you think about it.
Oh, yeah, but the evidence is so devastating that the conclusions are drawn automatically by the reader.
Right.
And it's incredible how quickly they begin to draw those conclusions and where it leads them. They will, I can assure you, have a completely different outlook toward Washington, D.C. From now on.
Well, it's as I mentioned in the epilogue, this is by far the single most complex and simultaneously the most transparent mess foisted off on the American people in the history of this country. It's complex because they're scrambling. I think that they seriously underestimated the intelligence of the American people and that folks would be watching and paying attention. And, you know, my motto on this whole thing has always been attention to detail is the difference between truth and error. And all we did was pay attention to detail. And by doing that, everything began to fall into place. And the words that people used and the comments that they made and little off-the-cuff curbside interviews opened up whole doors of research, and all of a sudden the little cockroaches began scrambling.
You know, I forgot to tell you. I obtained something for you today that will fit into the book. We found the Oath of Initiation of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. I knew you would be pleased about that.
Oh, yes. Well, that will go in Appendix A.
Right along with the person whom it goes with.
Yes, right along with.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's going to be, I think, quite a shock to a lot of people. But you know, none of this material is presented in a sensationalist manner, and nothing is dramatized. Everything that is in someone's words, that person actually said, and we can prove it. It's all documented.
Okay, hold that thought.
Sure.
Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to have your copy shipped out the day that it comes off the presses to you, you can order an advance copy now. If you just want the book, it's $30 postpaid. Make check or money order payable to Harvest. Harvest, H-A-R-V as in Victor, E-S-T. And send it to Harvest. P.O. Box 1970. That's P.O. Box 1970. Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's Harvest. Make check or money order payable to Harvest and send to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970. Eager, E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Now, if you would like an autographed copy of the book, the price is $35 postpaid. $35 postpaid. And we'll not be autographing any books except for these initial orders of autographed books. So if you want a first edition autographed book of Oklahoma City, day one, send $35 and make check or money order payable to Harvest. Send it to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. This book is going to shake the very foundations of this government. And it will make you so angry and open your eyes so wide that you're not even going to believe it when it happens. It's going to take a while for what you're going to read to sink in. Every bit of it is documented. It is the truth. It is not from one source. It is not rumor. It is fact. Backed up, sourced, documented, and nothing was used unless it could be verified by two or more sources. And everything is on record. We have not slipped one inch on this project. They may have vilified the militia, but it is the militia in the form of the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic that will be their undoing. In a few days, Michelle and I will be meeting with the typesetter and making sure that they understand exactly what is what and what goes where. And from then on, it's just a matter of routine work. And in 10 weeks or less, we will have the book ready and on the way to whoever has already ordered it. Michelle, did you ever think in the beginning that it was going to be such an all-encompassing and such a tremendous piece of work?
Well, no. Of course not.
If you had, you probably wouldn't have done it.
No, you got that right. It's been a very hard pull, and it's been hard on the family. It's been real hard on me. It's been hard on you. But it'll all be worth it because there is so much rumor, speculation, and baloney out there. None of it's true, and it just became like a calling almost when you know something is accurate to say, wait a minute, guys, this is what is really going on here. And of all the other books that I've seen that are out, not one of them has been written by anybody who lives here. And there's a real advantage to living here because you have an automatic entree to people that you need to interview, and you know where everything is. So it's been beneficial living here, but it's been a real hard job.
Yeah, you know something that has really helped us, though, is because of the work that we do and because of the work that we had done for years leading up to this, we were able to pretty much called the shots, and we knew what was happening and who the major players were and where this was going to lead before anybody else even had an inkling. And we still know things and understand much more than all of them put together even at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, without the networking of the intelligence service members, this would, of course, never happened. There are people out there that you would never suspect were doing anything at all for the intelligence service, and they help a great deal, a great deal. No one person could have ever done this alone. There's no way.
And that's the great advantage of such an organization, and it's a shame that we cannot name everyone and give them the credit that they so richly deserve, but if we did that, they would not be able to function in their capacity. Once their identity was of course discovered.
Right. The people that I have been working with, they don't want to be known. They don't want people to know who they are. They would never be able to continue doing what they're doing or continue finding things out and feeding us information that we need from upper level sources. So it's just better that they accept our thanks anonymously, and we'll all know the great effort that they put into it.
Yes, and someday, if I'm still alive, I'll make sure that their names are known, unless they, of course, tell me that they don't want that to happen. But if the final outcome is a good one, I think that that everybody will. Michelle, would you mind telling our listening audience some of the things that have happened to you because of your involvement and your leadership in this and your outspokenness, bearing in mind that we didn't have to bring you out into the open, but I felt that it was tremendously important that the powers that be understand that there was a large organization watching what they're doing and collecting evidence, because I knew, number one, that would cause them to make mistakes, and number two, it would cause them to be very careful about hurting anybody. And I know from my own experience and the experience of others who have been in dangerous situations that the best place to be when you're in danger is squarely in front of the public, and that's about the only safety that we really have. Would you mind relating some of the things that have happened and some of the feelings and tremendous pressures and things that that you've been subjected to?
Well, lack of sleep is a biggie. Early on, when I began to network with some of the people in this area who were also doing their own independent investigations, who were not members of the intelligence service, everybody was very much palsy-walsy and sharing information and calling on the phone and getting reports day after day and leads and sharing witnesses and so forth and so on. And all of that began to grind to a halt when our investigation went in one direction and everybody else's went in another. And the reason that we couldn't go in that other direction is because there was no solid documentation for it. And if there was, they were coming to the wrong conclusions about it. And I really don't want to name any names, okay?
Oh, you don't have to do that.
But friends who were friends aren't friends anymore. And there were people who did not realize the seriousness of what we were into and flagrantly blew off necessary security measures and allowed themselves to be hurt. And I wasn't going to go down the tubes with them when they went down, and I had to sever some nice connections. But, you know, there's enough people out there doing this that if you can't get the information from one source, it will come from another. You know, all the good things come to those who wait. And sometimes I did have to wait, because you just can't push these doors open. If you start pushing, you may not like what you find on the other side. Some of them you can kind of creep in there and make some discoveries, and then because you know one piece of information, you can get the rest of it. Otherwise, you have to wait, and it will come to you by asking the right questions and punching the right buttons and spreading little bits of information before people that they can confirm or deny or add to. I've learned an awful lot about dealing with the media and dealing with people who are very afraid, dealing with people who've been threatened by the feds. I've been abused by the media brutally, but that's tough. They're just going to have to accept the fact that I'm not going away.
You also began getting some very strange phone calls.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, you just got to expect that. Once somebody knows your name and you're in the phone book, everybody in the world starts calling you. And some of them are crazies, and some of them are just hang-ups, and you'll be talking on the phone, there's a lot of phone line noise, and you don't know if it's just because it's a windy day or if somebody's tapping your line. It's just intimidation stuff. You just kind of have to blow it off and go on. And the way I felt about it was, I'm not dealing with anything that the bad guys don't already know. The only thing they don't know is that I know it.
That's right.
And so there's virtually nothing that I might be talking about in a telephone conversation that they're not already aware of. And if I know about it and go public with it, that's their problem, not mine. And if I had to meet everybody in the dead of night with a big dark cloak on and all this kind of stuff, I'd never get any work done. You've got to be able to use your telephone, and you just have to do it fearlessly. There are some bits of information that were so sensitive that we did only meet in person in big fields and so forth, but not that often. not that often, because there are enough witnesses of what actually occurred here. They can't get rid of everybody.
No, in fact, there's so many that they don't even dare try.
Right, right.
That would open up whole new investigations and bring the public eye right back to them so quickly if they tried to do anything like that. You also found some allies in some places that we never suspected that we would find any allies. And you don't have to mention their names either.
Give me a hint of who you're referring to. I mean...
Oh, well, I don't want to do that because we might lose them. But you know who we're talking about, and it's not just one or two.
Oh, right. Right. No, we don't want to reveal those things.
And how is everything settling out now that you can see the end of this first piece of this project?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be able to relax until I'm actually holding the finished, published, bound book in my hand. And then I'm going to take a week off.
Well, compared to what we've been through and all the work that you've done, 2.5 months really isn't that long to wait.
No, it isn't, and I'll probably be working hard on the second volume anyway. But things have relaxed a little bit. The information that you receive in an investigation like this comes in spurts, and the unfortunate thing is that you never know when it's going to be a big spurt. So when things begin slowing down, and a day or two goes by and there's not something critical happening, if you're not really careful, you begin to actually go with the flow and relax a little bit, and life begins to settle into a normal pattern again, and then all of a sudden... The phone rings all day long, dinner doesn't get cooked, no laundry gets washed, life is at a standstill, and you're up all night long, and you may do this for 2 or 3 days. And there's no regularity to it, none at all.
No, and there's not for anyone who's in this work when something is happening in your particular area. In my case, I'm managing people all over the world, and so my life is in that kind of constant state always. Because there's always something going on, not of the magnitude of near a federal building, but certainly always something going on all over the place.
Well, the scale of what you do is bigger than the scale of what I do, but the event here is bigger.
The event there was incredibly devastating and huge, beyond what anybody wanted, but we expected that these kinds of things were going to happen and had predicted it well in advance.
Yeah, you just kind of have to, adapt, improvise, and overcome.
Yes.
And just get used to it. Be healthy.
You know, I've had the great honor of reading, being able to read some of the excerpts from your book over the air a couple of times. The magnitude of it is so big that what I touched upon isn't even a dimple on an ant's chin. But how would you like to read some of your own book on the air tonight?
Well, I thought about doing that, but I wasn't sure what would be most appropriate. It's very difficult to pull out short excerpts because everything interlinks with something else.
Well, just give them a taste have the experience of reading your own book to the world.
Well, I have two things we can pick from. Both of them take about the same amount of time, about 10 minutes. We can deal with the survivors being used in a political agenda, or we can take a lovely section of General Parton's press conference where he deals about the National War of Liberation. What do you think would be most interesting?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go ahead and choose, but you're going to have to make it in 8 minutes, because that's all you got from right now.
I better do Parton. He's shorter.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, this is from Appendix C, and this will all be quoting from General Parton's press conference. Fascinating stuff. He was asked what he thought really motivated the bombing, and did he believe that someone was being framed to take the blame for what really occurred. And he gave a very lengthy response, and this is just part of it. Quoting General Parton, In my many years in the military, in weapons systems development, I found two things that give you a basis for long development. Long-term and long-range prediction. When you lay down the requirements for a weapon system, it takes roughly 10 years to bring in a weapon system. When the D-1 was starting, the requirements laid down, before you got money and everything to do the program, it normally takes about 10 years before you have a fighting force in the field ready to do something. If you're going to keep it around for 20 years or 10 years, what is your crystal ball for looking out there 20 to 30 years in the future to see what your operational scenarios are going to be? I've never found but two things that were useful. One was the extrapolation of technology, and the second thing was the global program for transforming the world into a world social system published by the World Congress in Russia in Moscow in 1928, approved in the night by the Congress in the meeting in Moscow. They worked from 1919 to 1928 to perfect that program and had to implement it. The next party Congress, in 1935, reviewed it. The only thing they changed was they put in a little more emphasis on what they called the United Popular Front. One, they divided the world into three different kinds of countries with different strategies to be used in different countries based on their vulnerabilities. For the United States and most of the Western Hemisphere, the strategies for transitioning countries was a war of national liberation. There's a whole section in their documents dealing with the strategy and tactics. I could give you all of the references to them, and you can go look them up and study them for yourself. The strategy for the United States was a war of national liberation because they considered us to have oppressed nations within. In Canada, the war of national liberation is based on the French separatists. In Ireland, it's the Protestant versus the Catholic. In Africa, in Rwanda, it's the Tutsi versus the Hutu tribes, and you can go on and on. Many of these revolutions have gone on to completion. Castro's was strictly a war of national liberation. There are some other things that I could go into in detail, but the problem is, wars of national liberation, and there are many of them going on around the world, it's not just here. If you don't read, you don't understand this. If you read, I hope some of you read the material and you'll see what's going on, because this is the source of terrorism. Now, in the United States, and you look at the rest of the world and their program, not our program, their program, it's their documentation. It's their official documents that they have approved by a World Congress of their leaders. In the United States, they have been in the preparatory phase. The first step is this preparatory phase, and it is long-term. It exacerbates the conflict thesis. It is nonviolent. It is organizational. It is generating the hostilities to carry on a revolution later. Then at the appropriate hour, they move into a period of escalating violence. You start off with political assassinations, kidnappings for ransom, urban guerrilla warfare. A lot of the things you see going on in the drug business is orchestrated in this way. Then you move up into the higher levels of violence until you have power to take over control of the government. Castro took over in early 1960. He completed the period of escalating violence. The next period is the period of exploitation. In other words, you use that country, once you have captured it, to move against the next contiguous country or the next target country to keep the political officers from trying to rush a hard link. Then people don't get too worried about it. So if you look at what's going on in this country, they're getting close to the period of escalating violence. If you notice, within the last 12 months, all the little factional groups out in the Southwest have gone under one command. In Mexico, you had your first revolutionary violence this year. You're moving toward the period of escalating violence. There are two things you always try to do before you move to the period of escalating violence. One is you try to remove the death penalty, because if people are going to be involved in revolutionary activities, they get caught. They might get executed. But if you remove the death penalty, the worst thing they have to fear is being locked up. And when the revolution goes to completion, they may become the president, like Mandela or Fidel Castro, you see. So they don't really fear being locked up as long as the revolution is going to completion and they'll be free. But the death penalty is intimidating. The second thing they always try to do is to disarm the people. In that way, several hundred thousand professional people, industrialists and business people, are no threat to the revolution. But 10 million armed and independent farmers are a terror to the revolution. And that's why there's a big effort and push to deny your Second Amendment rights. Now, looking at the United States right now, here today, I mentioned who orchestrated all of the killings in this country in 1992, 93, and 94. The way was prepared to get the assault weapons bill through. There were a lot of senseless killings, and I mentioned them in that letter. Now, today, you have had before the Senate and the House an anti-terrorism bill that was put over there in January. I've talked to many people on the Hill in both the Senate and the House, and they were all of the opinion, before the bomb went off, that the FBI had all of the authority that they needed to detain terrorism. And if you ask me if they had the authority to do what they did in Waco or Ruby Ridge, I think they may have had too much authority. They were exercising authority that they didn't really have. But now you have this anti-terrorism bill. And when the bomb went off in Oklahoma City, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and in the House were jumping all over each other trying to get a bill out, even bypassing the Senate and bypassing the committees. And if you don't think that what happened in Oklahoma City had a tremendous impact across the United States with respect to focusing on getting that piece of legislation out. Now, if you were sitting somewhere else in the world orchestrating a war of national liberation, would you want to exercise some little thing like this that you could do, a little thing like you did in Oklahoma, to affect legislation that would impose further gross restrictions on the people, which we have never seen in this country? Then he reads a lengthy quote from a book by Anatoly Golitsyn called New Lies for Old, about how the same thing was put in place in Russia. And he concludes, now, if they will do that inside of the Soviet Union to affect Congress, would they not set off, or somebody pushing wars of national liberation set off the bomb here? And then he's asked by the media, well, in your opinion, is the Oklahoma City bombing the result of leftist forces who are attempting to get past legislation on the federal level to crack down on something? And Barton responded, whoever it is, and it's a noted big issue, to do what was done, you must readily admit it had a gigantic impact on trying to get that legislation through.
Wow. That's really something.
Isn't that something?
It is.
And he spoke for easily an hour of that press conference.
Uh-huh.
Amazing stuff. And right on the money.
Well, it is right on the money. The only one thing I disagree with him and many others who want to blame it solely upon the communists and don't understand that the communists and socialism are a creation of the Illuminati in order to create the Hegelian conflict to bring about their one world government.
Well, he never did come right out and say that it was a communist plot. He said it could have been orchestrated from anywhere in the world.
Yes.
And that was his official opinion to the media about the incident.
And he's correct.
Yes.
Well, we're out of time.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
And, folks, I'll give you the address and the prices again tomorrow. If you want to purchase Michelle's book, it's actually the Intelligence Services book written by Michelle Moore. The price for the book is $30 postpaid. If you want an autographed copy, it's $35. Do not listen to the address following this broadcast. I'll give you the address again and the prices again tomorrow if you missed it tonight. Good night. Thank you, Michelle, and God bless each and every single one of you.